So, welcome to our sixth Redevcast. This time we're going to talk about sustainability. Exactly 1 year ago, we launched our 14th report. And now, just now, we launched our 15th. So it's a nice moment to revisit this topic. I'm here with Nele and with Martijn, two colleagues who have a lot to do with sustainability, implementing it in our organization, in our assets, trying to change mindsets of people, to engage, to come along on a journey, to realize our newly introduced mission, which is to lead the transformation of cities to ensure they are sustainable and livable. Martijn, to start with you, who are you? What do you do?
Thank you, Priscilla. I'm Martijn Horsman. I work as Sustainable Development Manager at Redevco. And well, I need to implement requirements for having our mission 2040 set.
Good. Nele.
Thank you, Priscilla. Welcome. I'm Nele Schelfout. I work at the Redevco Belgium office as Head of Project Management and work there together with the teams to get into in practice our sustainability mission.
Yep.
Within the development projects and the renovation projects on our portfolio.
Okay. We will talk about sustainability, but not just in a general manner. We will talk about the challenges and the learnings you have gained over the years, or over the year that you've joined us. Nele, you've been with us a little bit longer. Let's talk about the lessons learned. How have you become a sustainability expert?
I'm not a sustainability expert.
Are you not?
No, okay. No. I don't have the because it's so a wide range of topics that fall under sustainability. So for me, being a sustainability expert on every level there is
not possible.
Not possible. So, and that's also maybe a bit of a barrier that people see it as such an important, but also
complex
and
difficult,
that they find it difficult to get started with.
Yeah. It's not
overwhelming.
A trick.
It's overwhelming.
It's not a trick. It's a mindset. It's easy.
Ah, it's easy. This is the first time I hear easy.
It's not easy. It's just
a lot of people don't find it easy.
No, because they are solution visionaries. So they look at solutions and try to put solutions in place. But you have to find, you have to take a more holistic approach, which is pretty hard for common engineers. But
I think you often get the answer back, Martijn. For you, it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
For you, it's easy.
Yeah.
You have an open mindset, and also you're interested. You have a lot of experience in it. But I think that a lot of colleagues, even within Redevco, find it not at all easy to start with. How do I implement sustainability in my project? So if I can get a message across in this podcast, is that don't be afraid. But just take a look around, because there are a lot of experts in the market who really like our mission statement and really liked to work together to be challenged and to set the bar high. Because I think for a sustainability expert, to get a mission, mm-hmm. to just make a moderate project, it's not a challenge.
Yeah, you can't do it on your own. So it's not like, how can I implement? No. It's about working together. You should actually start early making a group, and then with the group you decide what you're going to develop and how you're going to do that, and that should be a common practice with a common goal in mind, and everyone diverting from this common goal would be diverting from their own goal. So it's like what's it called, the lean process, where you sit together and you
this is not the black belts and the all that stuff.
It is. Okay. But then in contract management, so you find your conflicts of interest before you start, and you find a way to mitigate the risk that these conflicts will arise, and then you put together a contract where everybody has the same interest.
So.
But
it sound easy.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not easy.
But how do we then bring
mindset.
The whole group, so 250 yeah. people, mm-hmm. to the level that they have the same mindset and think, oh, I can do this.
But surround yourself with experts from the market and let them convince
help you,
and you make sure that they get the design brief that we use within Redefco. And there it's clearly set that the level is high. We set the bar high, and then you should start from there in every project. And as you go along, you will surely have challenges, or you will have certain points that you say, okay, this is a solution that mm-hmm. it's very hard to integrate in this project. But then take the choice, okay, we will not do it now, but make our project flexible enough that we can make the decision later. Because maybe now it's not, the context is not right, or the atmosphere around our retailers or our tenants, because there's a lot of stakeholders mm-hmm. involved in every project. But at least if you don't take the option now, make the option possible for the future. And then if you document it right, you can still take that solution out within 5 or 10 years and see maybe that's at that moment the right time. And then what we did as an example in Internat, to make that everyone in the design team was towards that same common goal, mm-hmm. is that we integrated in our contracts with the designer, the architects, even the stability engineer, even the technical expert around the table. Everyone from the beginning said, okay, and then we implemented the cradle-to-cradle principles in their contract. Mm. Okay.
And they
accepted it.
Okay.
They accepted it because they were really, it was also for them a bit of a change, being not only responsible for their expertise, make sure that the project is set on time and within budget, but also make sure that the cradle-to-cradle principles were respected. And what does that mean? For a designer, design with as less material as possible. Mm. That is a cradle-to-cradle principle set in design. It's not only about the choice of materials, but also
already
make sure
from the start, from
that
the
you make the same building, get the same rents, but with less material. Mm. And that you do in the design.
It's material efficiency, like you have energy efficiency aside for...
It's under the title cradle-to-cradle, and maybe that scares people a bit off because, we don't know what that means. Mm. But it's as simple as that. So get your experts around to make the change, or maybe set in normal standard words what this sustainable mission means.
Yep.
Because you can set it down to every expertise, going from stability, from design, from technical engineer, even for the design of the parking, of the landscaping. Everything.
Yeah, every element.
This is a systems approach, which you actually need. So,
are we not doing that for every project?
With the requirements that we've put in our design brief, with the mission, with the launch of the new mission, we have set requirements for the system. So the system has to require to certain carbon levels.
Mm.
But still, that would not be enough, because if. And I just got presented by Arup, and it was really interesting at Waste Build. The signal that if you would be developing all projects on the highest sustainability rates, like Green Star, Six Star, or BREEAM Outstanding, LEED, Platinum, you would still not get beyond the threshold of 3 degrees global warming.
Mm.
And, actually people use these ratings to as a tool to get to a certain level, and when you reach the level, you're done. But we're not.
No.
We and if you would take that on average, then that means that there will be a lot of projects that have to be sort of developed climate positive. I don't know any project that is being done climate positive. Hmm. So I think that our requirements are as tough as can be. We set requirements where consultants get nervous and start calling us or mailing us. Are you sure that you want this? Because we don't know how. And we expect that you will find out how. And if you can't reach that threshold, you have to make sure that you get as close as possible.
Yeah.
It's comply or explain. Because, and this is really the mission. This is what this mission is about. And I think this is also what leading is about. Mm. And of course you'll make mistakes because you learn from mistakes. If you don't try, if you don't fail. If you don't fail, you don't learn. So we don't know the way either, but it's just that you take a bold step and you step up and start leading in a way and you will find your way.
And do we have enough time?
No, of course not. We should have started this in the 1970s when we knew that it was going to be a disaster about this time. No, there's not enough time. And of course, it's good to set steps in time to put diamonds on a planning. And everybody knows that the schedule is not going to be reached. And certainly not when the steps are as large as this one. So
how can we make sure that we, if we're not in time now, reach the maximum possible?
Do the best you can, fail a lot, learn a lot, and communicate about it and do it as fast as possible. And if you do it fast, you will probably make more mistakes. And, well, what you can do in the Netherlands today is not possible yet in Germany, is not thought of in Spain, but that will change because everything is going faster. Communication is more easy. You can find ways to do things in a different way. And there needs to be one entrepreneur in a country that understands the business model and is able to translate that to the regulations in the country where he is active. Mm. And he can start a new business because you can feel there's appetite for it.
Maybe one of the audience.
I can add to that, and don't be afraid that, because sometimes the timeline of a project is rather long. Projects that were set up in feasibility phase 2 or 3 years ago, when the mission statement was not as clear as it is right now, don't be afraid there to push the pause button and reflect on
are we still going to build this as
presenting it now?
Yeah.
And even if it means reviewing things, doing things in another way, better. Even if it's, and that is because people are in that project for such a long time, it's really hard to change them now. It's like they're seeing the finish line, and now there's someone putting up a lot of intermediate bars they have
detours,
to jump.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have that experience already?
Yeah.
Do they still like you in the countries?
I'm neutral. But.
You didn't get this job to be liked, right?
No, I didn't get this job to get new friends. No, but it is hard because sometimes you get into a project that has been decided on already 3-4 years ago before we even had this mission statement. So to be in a project with a certain time limit and the budget, the budget is always a problem because when a project is already being in development for about 4 years, the economic pressure will already make it into a almost non-feasible project. And then you start asking questions on, did you think of that? Why are you demolishing the whole structure? Why it still could work? And that basically are the questions that you don't want to hear when you're a project manager or asset manager working on a project. So, I've had these jobs as well, so I understand their position. And I also tell them, I understand your position, but you should understand mine as well. I am now looking at the built environment from a sustainability viewpoint, while you look at sustainability from a building viewpoint. And that makes it so interesting that I see different things. I have a different view than you do. But the fact is that there's an overlap and you should sort of find that sweet spot where you can do what you still can do.
But you both have the responsibility that you're deciding about the project that is going to be there for 40, 50 or more years. Yeah. So
what is one year to think about or 6 months to think about?
And reviewing things.
We work for the same company with the same mission.
Yeah.
And that's what I've always found intriguing, that there's a company having a mission statement and people knowing about this mission statement and working
accordingly, and people not even knowing that there is a mission statement. And I'm not talking about a company in particular, but it is somewhere in my background. And it's really interesting to see that managers sometimes have a more operational agenda, and they are responsible for the operation, and that does not really fit this really high responsible sustainable view that was put on by the board. And that's what makes it sort of squeeze and what makes cracks in your organization. And I think it's...
But you touch upon an important point. I mean, these managers or colleagues in our company, we are all also measured and judged by certain KPIs. Difficult words. But if we do not align them, then,
You can choose to do everything to reach your KPI, but you should actually tell that if you would be able to reach your KPI, but then you will have to then you have to accept the consequences that you can't follow the mission. And if that is the case, you should make that clear to your board, because your board sets you on a mission, and your board should know whether the mission is accomplishable or not. And I think that everyone in our company has the right to stand up and say, well, if you ask this and you reach for that goal, we're not going to make it. It can be a gut feeling. It can be on paper. And I think that we have this safe environment where you can...
Yeah, we are all challengers. Yeah, we should be able to do that. Yeah.
Or prioritize say that we accept that if KPIs and Mission 2040 get in conflict with each other, that there's a priority on Mission 2040.
Yeah, but it's not a decision of the asset manager. Oh, I think it should be the decision of the board. We should be transparent.
I wanna tie into that. I'm also a bit conscious of time, but it's not only us, right? As Rodefco, we are working with investors. I mean, that's their money. We are working with, we touched upon the stakeholders that we are engaging with, but also the tenants. So there are a lot of stakeholders to manage and to get aligned before we can push through.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
We engage. So we have obviously different scopes. So we have things that we have on our hands directly, which we can influence. And we have parts, for instance, that we have not on our hands. So when our tenants do a fit out, we can set requirements, but it's mostly not in contracts required. So it's a workaround is to start talking to the larger brands to have their sustainability experts in contact with us to see where our missions or our ideas come together, and then you have to find the way to work in the best possible way, and to try to convince them to maybe improve even. So I'm already talking to large brands on improvements of their fit outs.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Which does not necessarily mean that it is being
implemented
right away, but it takes time.
Yeah, and that's what we don't have.
We had an interesting discussion on tenants and their the way we have contracts with tenants, that we do a core and shell. And I think it's interesting your view on having parts of the fit out probably not anymore with the tenant, but maybe we should do it ourselves.
Yeah, we have that is typical in the retail park portfolio and in the retail sector as a whole, is that we offer our tenants shell and core. We do what we can, and we set the bar high for ourselves on what we set up as a building. But there's a large part within the tenant's responsibility in the techniques and how they cool, heat, and ventilate their stores, which has a one-to-one effect on the quality of the shell and core building they get. So we see there is split benefits
sometimes,
that we do the investments and they get the benefit of it. Mm. But we see, and in the ideal world, we should offer our tenants an a unit that is with techniques
already
installed, because then we have everything in our hands, and the interior design matches with their with their concept.
Yep.
But at least that we get the impact of what we do on possible measures on CO2 reduction on our energy intensity, that we also see the effect of it.
Yeah.
But that is a huge change in the built environment and in the retail sector, which is not going to be to happen overnight.
No.
So what we do for the moment is that, and we do already several years, is that we work with the green lease, where we engage largely with our tenant in the contract phase, that we get them to sign the green deal, the green lease, together with us, so that at least we have them on board.
And they are willing to provide us with the data that we need also?
Well, signing is one thing, getting
but
into
execution
practice.
Of,
but it's like that. If we say everything is covered by the green lease,
it's
not the case.
No.
Because sometimes you get your negotiations done with commercial people around the table, and they are... And they have a KPI on signing the contract. But afterwards, it's another team that that does the implementation of the techniques in the building,
and
then they do a copy paste of the store they just did 2 months ago.
It's like the story you whisper in the ear on one side of the group, and on the other side you hear a different story, because you have to tell time and time again what the agreements were, and then to different people executing. So you know, with a contract, you just have square meters, you have your rental value, okay, that's all set. And then somewhere at, now I think Article 19 or so, it starts to go about, oh yeah, and we do not want you to produce any waste here, and that sort of things. And then, well, this will be arranged. You know, it's somewhere at a level
somewhere,
where it's holistic.
Yeah.
And but in the end, it comes to an account manager in that store that was not there when they closed the contract. And he gets, or she gets... confronted with parts of the agreement that they don't know about, and if they would have known, they would have made different choices. And they are actually confronted with trouble that they were not supposed to have. So it's really uncomfortable for them.
And we see that the larger the structure of the tenant is on the internal organization, the wider these two levels are apart from each other.
Yep.
And that means that not necessarily large retail chains have the best sustainability in practice.
Yep.
We see...
And they might focus on different things in sustainability. They're probably trying to improve their chain responsibility and
things. Just take the difference between a large brand that has to report on their sustainability issues and a larger SME that does not have to. And this larger SME and even smaller SMEs will look at their energy consumption, probably.
Yeah.
That would be their biggest challenge.
Yeah.
But we see, then again, we see small retailers, not with these large structures, but really an entrepreneurship, and their sustainability is not mentioned as a word because it's in their DNA.
Yeah.
It is already there.
It's about cutting OPEX. It's about cutting costs. So. Yeah. That
it's
means automatically reducing energy and reducing costs, and they really understand what is needed for that. So there we have sometimes a very easy conversation because they understand, and they sometimes see that, okay, this green lease is really necessary, because sometimes 20 pages to be signed
I'm performing a lot better than you've put in your requirements.
Yeah, and data to collect, because there we see
data,
that there's an issue about data, and then they see. And we have to put this all on paper. You need data on every point of these.
That is data.
I hear a lot of complexity.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things to solve and to bridge. If you would, so I want to, this is a nice conversation, but I think we need to get to a certain conclusion. But if you would like to change one thing in your work or in our company that would help you, can you name something that would help you do your job better or achieve your...
Can it be two?
Yeah. Let's see if you have the same thing.
Data collection and mindset.
Okay.
Yeah, data collection is really key. And if you want to, if you have a pathway to go somewhere, you will have to know the start and the end point. Otherwise, you have no threshold or you have no benchmark on what you're doing. So that's definitely key. And data is spread through the organizations. Every organization has data in different kinds. And you just need to find a way to put that all together and bake that beautiful cake of it. And in a way that an auditor can reproduce what you've done. So that's, I think, the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
Because every country has its own systems. Its own EPDs, that's environmental product declarations, that's like a statement what your product is behaving like. So the same product can be it can have a different EPD in different countries, and we are really searching for that life cycle analysis in a central way that everybody understands what it is about, so that you can do a benchmark. And now we will have to deal with the benchmark for every country apart, which doesn't make it easy, which doesn't make it really comparable. But if we have all the data together, we could put them, reflect them to the data, the way we would do that in the Netherlands or in Spain or in Germany or in UK. And then you would have a benchmark for your whole portfolio. So that's probably a workaround. And
I see a nice task for you, Martijn.
Yeah.
Centralization. I want to round off the conversation. Is there anything that you would like to provide the listeners about how to make this work, or advice?
Well, I get to my second point then about changing mindset. Don't be afraid. Jump. It's a nice jump. Okay.
Yeah, be brave.
Yeah.
This is not like a commercial, but I have my LinkedIn portfolio is for the jump. It was where I found out that things could be done differently.
I didn't know.
You didn't look it up. And I hesitated of changing it for this simple portrait again. And people thought, no, don't do that, because it's really great. And it's not according to the rules of LinkedIn, because you're not portraited in the way that they can recognize you. But this is who I am. You take that jump. And well, it did me a lot of good. I think I'm on an amazing job, doing nice things and doing the right things for my feelings. And I think that's most important, that you enjoy life, enjoy what you do, and be brave and don't be afraid for the unknown, because it's the unknown might bring you more than the known.
Than you expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And also reflecting to our statement relaunched now, to being a leader. If you want to lead things just by following the rules, we won't get there. So Mission 2040 is set about being outside ruling and doesn't mean taking uncovered risks, but just explore and see what we can do.
Great. I think this is a nice way to end this podcast. Thank you for the conversation. Thank you for your advice.
Thank you, Priscilla.
And I hope our listeners will feel a little bit inspired and we all jump.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.